Hanito, and welcome to Native Chalk Talk, a podcast by Natives for all. Here we're keeping our Native ancestors' stories and history alive, while also sharing with you our Native culture, traditions, and more. I'm Rachel Youngman, a Choctaw originally from Anadarko, Oklahoma. I hope you'll enjoy this journey with me as we learn from our Native American guests. And I hope you'll do me a favor. Feel free to like and share these episodes. I so appreciate it. Yakuki. So, you know, there are a few types of blankets out there, which I didn't know that until I started digging into the information that you've been putting out there. So let's start with trade blankets. I know that you've mentioned that term a few times. What are trade blankets?
Well, okay, so a trade blanket is always a wool blanket. Now, it may be part wool and part cotton, but it's primarily wool. So a Pendleton blanket at today is 84% wool and 16% cotton. And the cotton is there only for durability. Okay. The mixture of the two makes the blanket last longer. So, and that's been going on for a long time. The original Pendleton blankets were 100% wool, but they found over time that cotton was an important factor that gave the blanket more strength and durability. So a trade blanket is always wool. Now, there's also a type of blanket called the camp blanket that we haven't discussed at all. Now, these are also American Indian patterns, but these are in cotton. And these were made starting about 1915, 1920. They were made in huge quantities, made in the millions, because cotton could be sold for about a tenth the price of a wool blanket.
Right.
And there were also no copyright laws that were enforceable. So if Pendleton came out with a great looking design and the cotton manufacturer wanted to rip off the design, they could totally do it and get away with it. And they could sell the blanket that Pendleton was selling for $9 or $10 for a dollar or less. Yeah. And those blankets are called camp blankets because a lot of kids went to summer camp with those blankets.
Okay.
And so those were sold almost primarily through department stores, JCPenney, W.T. Grant, all the big department stores, Sears, all the big department stores of the day. And right. They were also used in carnivals as prizes. So
it shows the difference in what they were worth, right?
Yeah, yeah. So a carnival operator could buy these by the gross and, you know, for 75 cents a piece probably, and offer them as prizes. So again, these are also highly collectible because there was a type of pattern they could do that the wool manufacturers could not do. It was called ombre. Ombre patterns, you have your colors shade into each other, and it's a very, very beautiful effect. They couldn't do that at the woolen mills because the only way you can do this is to stop your loom and feed in a new color of yarn. And it's so labor intensive that the wool manufacturers didn't even bother with it. It was only done by really one mill. Excuse me. There was a mill called Beacon Manufacturing that was originally in Massachusetts, but relocated to North Carolina. And they literally would make 20 million blankets in a year. And of those 20 million, at least 50% would be Indian patterns.
Wow.
So that's staggering. No one knows how many blankets the woolen mills made. But when Pendleton first started, I would guess that there are years they made less than 5,000 blankets total.
Big difference. So obviously, though, the cotton Indian camp blankets were not nearly as warm, right, as the
They were never embraced by the American Indians. Never. To find a cotton blanket on an Indian reservation or in Indian hands, you know, reservation or not, that was brought there by somebody else. That was not anything that an American Indian thought of as being legitimate. That was like, you know, that's like an off brand, you know, that would be that would be buying like, you know, bread in a can, you know.
I love it. Bread in a can.
Well, you know, it's just like, okay, seriously, what are you doing with that counterfeit blanket? That's not a trade.
It's not even going to keep you warm. You're going to freeze
Yeah.
to death.
So this was strictly a Caucasian thing. And
Gotcha.
there's a lot of collectors for those because they're more prevalent. If you call me and go, I need a bunch of camp blankets, I can offer you far more of those because they
Yeah.
made so many more of those.
Sure.
So they're more easily obtained, but even those still not that easily because they're 100 years old.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Well,
Yeah.
now something interesting about those such as yourself who collect the earliest of the Pendleton blankets is that these older ones probably weren't even owned by American Indians. And why is that?
That's absolutely true. Because American Indians always had the opportunity to buy or trade for a new blanket and look forward to releases of new blankets the way a fashionista would look forward to a new line of clothing from whichever designer she favored, Versace
Right.
or Dior, Prada. It was exciting. You know, this was a primary element of your apparel and your look. You know,
Right.
you wanted to have a cool looking blanket. And so the American Indians also tended to use things until they were no longer usable. And
Exactly.
so they would get damaged. If you're obviously standing around a fire, you're going to get a spark. Your blanket is not going to be as pretty as it once was. So you're going to go to a trader and eventually you're going to replace the blanket you have because you've used yours or you've damaged yours. And the trader didn't want an old blanket. They probably just threw them away. So there was really no reason for these things to survive, to be honest, because they really didn't have value associated with them until really the 1980s. And even then, it wasn't that much money compared to Navajo rugs that have had a lot of interest and a lot of
Yeah.
value for 200 years.
Right.
So most of the early blankets that exist because they were owned by Caucasians.
Yeah,
So
that's
as,
a good point. I would have never thought of it that way.
yeah, I think in all this time, again, I've been buying and selling these for 54 years, and I do this every day. And even when I was a comedy writer, every day I looked for these or had a conversation about them or did something regarding them. I was always on the hunt. I'll always be on the hunt. And in all that time, and with all the American people, American Indian people I've been lucky enough to meet, I think I've bought three blankets out of 50,000 that belong to American Indians.
Wow. And again, it's because they've used them until they're completely worn out, or they're
Yeah.
buried with someone, or they're given away as gifts among their tribe still. So it makes
Exactly.
sense. Yeah.
And you know, also, you know, when I talk to American Indians, they always seem to, someone in the family always remembers, oh yeah, I'm pretty sure we have this blanket that belonged to our great grandmother, but they never seem to materialize. So
Right.
I don't know if they just don't want to show them to me or they actually don't have them. You know, it's interesting when you hear family stories, you know, either non-Indian or American Indian. The family story is always so glamorized. You know, I've been offered, I think, 1,000 rifles that have belonged to General Custer, you know, 500, you know, axes, you know, that belong to Sitting Bull. You know, they never tell the story where they go, oh, yeah, this was owned by some no-name person. It's always, yeah, it's always, oh, yeah, this was George Washington's. This was, so. Every day I hear from someone that tells me this ridiculous story, you know, that basically they've been fed by their family. They have no reason to disbelieve it. You know, it's descended from the family, believe it, you know, but they'll be showing me something that was made literally last Tuesday. And they'll say the family story is that we've owned this for 300 years. You know, oh, okay. Well,
Amazing.
yeah, it is amazing. So,
I love that. That's probably so. You collectors must hear that all the time.
Well, you know, collectors are a very odd group of people to begin with. So, you know, hearing them tell odd stories is expected.
It just comes with
you
the territory.
You should talk to a fishing rod collector, for example. If you talk to a fly fishing rod collector, those people will talk to you literally about varnish for days on end. Because the makers of what they consider the very best fly fishing rods, they all had their own formula for varnish. And so these people.
So exciting.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, they talk about the same thing with antique violins, like Stradivarius. You know, they'll talk about the varnish on the string. So anyway, collectors are very odd people, usually, you know, social misfits.
Well, in the Pendleton collector's world, there are some highly desired colors, right? What are those colors?
Well, the colors that are really in demand are primarily black and red, but any primary color. What Pendleton made the most of were brown blankets. So because even 100 years ago, neutral colors were the fashion. And so for every 10 blankets they made, 8 or 9 of them would basically be brown with other colors in them, but on a brown field. So if you start collecting blankets, if you make 2 phone calls, you can own 10 brown blankets pretty quickly.
Gotcha.
So then you go, okay, I've got enough brown blankets. Now let me find these other colors. Well, they're harder to find and more expensive. So,
I'm sure.
And if you get a black and red one with a great design, then it's going to cost money. But I should add, you know, people wonder about the prices of these things. And they might sound like a lot, but they're actually modest if you compare them to Navajo weavings. Mm-hmm. Privately, the world record for a Navajo weaving is over $2 million. But Navajo blankets have sold for huge amounts of money. Whereas with trade blankets, the most expensive blanket I've ever heard of selling was $28,000. But most of them, you could get a blanket, you could get an absolutely gorgeous blanket from me that's 100 years old that would run you maybe $1,000, $1,500.
Okay.
And it'd be incredible. And that really, you know, you mentioned earlier that Pendleton blankets are expensive. And right now, with tax and everything else, they're probably about $300.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking about a blanket that's 100 years old that's 5 times the price of that.
Right.
And in collector's terms, that's cheap fun. Because if you take $1,500 and try to buy a vintage Navajo rug, you'll get maybe one of the 4 corners of the rug rather than the whole rug.
Right.
It's really, you know, by collector standards, you know, if you're a car collector or something, you know, $100,000 is nothing. $200,000, you know, millions are possible, you know. So, you know, for a large amount of money, you could buy a major collection of these blankets.
So what have you probably sold your most expensive blanket for?
Well, I've sold blankets for $10,000, $15,000, but, you know, those are 1 out of 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 blankets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've sold blankets as cheap as $100. You know, it just depends on the blanket and the condition and the pattern. All that criteria has to be taken into context. And because I've done this for so long, I really try to go overboard in pricing them correctly. And because I've handled so many blankets, I sort of have a pretty good idea of how rare something is and also how desirable it is. You know, it can be really rare and still be really ugly. And if it's ugly, you know, it's not going to carry a big price tag. You know, like I said, with the jacket that DiCaprio wore, I had this thing for sale for years. I think I offered it to people for $100 and they just went, you got to be kidding, you know.
Now look. Oh my
God. Now that blanket is, you know, I couldn't buy that blanket from Apple for $1 million.
It's the ugly duckling blanket. I love
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You
so
know,
proud
but
of it.
Again, DiCaprio puts it on and suddenly it's transformed into, you know, it's the equivalent of what used to be a mink stole, you know.
And it's one of those brown ones, right? So.
Oh God, it's horrible. It's it's mustard and ivory and brown, and it's just ugly. It's just ugly.
So funny. I love it. But I wouldn't have thought that it was ugly when I saw it. I remember seeing it in the movie. And
oh, no, I have people write me all the time. God, what a great jacket. And I'm thinking, okay, I have 350 blankets here that would make that jacket look like, you know, it should be thrown into, you know.
I bet. You know, you talked about the condition of the blankets. If they're not in good condition, is there an expert out there that can repair these blankets?
They're not repairable at all. Now, Navajo rugs are repairable because they are not woven densely enough, or so densely rather, where they can't get a needle in between the stitches to rework it. With these blankets, with hundreds, if not thousands, of stitches to the inch, it's impossible to make a repair that's invisible. Impossible.
I bet.
I've never seen anyone do it. Now, there's some people who are better at it than others, but you can tell it's been repaired. There's no question. So, and I should add that the earlier and rarer the blanket, the more forgivable damage is. If you know you're never going to see another one of these things, and it's spectacular, but it's got a stain that won't come out, or it's got a tear, it's still a collectible blanket. The price goes down, though. What I tell people is, I don't know if this is really a good equation, but if you have a Ferrari, everyone knows a Ferrari is a valuable commodity. But if a Ferrari is in a head-on collision, it's scrap metal.
Right.
And that's exactly, you know, I would say the same for the blankets. If it's a great blanket, but it has been abused over the years, then you've just got a crappy looking blanket. You know, it's a crappy looking old blanket, and the value goes down.
So who are these people that are typically selling these blankets? I mean, are they just individuals who have them laying around at their grandparents' house? And, you know, what's the deal with that?
Oh, well, that's a good question. Well, a lot of people contact me just the way the people from Killers of the Flower Moon found me. There's no dealers. All the people that deal in Navajo rugs, they don't deal in these at all. They don't understand them. They don't really know how to value them. They usually just refer people to me. So it's interesting, you know, how these people always seem to arrive at my doorstep. And usually they are inherited, or there's something they bought at a garage sale, or a friend gave it to them, you know. And they never know what it is. And I always tell them accurately what it is and what they have. I don't mislead them. And then I ask them, you know, if it's for sale, they can consign it to me, or I'll buy it outright, whatever they want. They just sort of show up where they show up, just sort of like everything in the antique world. You know, you don't really know what's out there. You're hoping there's more than you can imagine, but that seems to be less true every year, because once they go into collections, they're absorbed and they don't come on the market again, probably during my lifetime. So most of the blankets I've sold, I will never see again, nor will anyone else, unless they go to the collector's home. So, and you know, how many 100-year-old blankets in great shape are out there? Probably not a whole bunch, you know? So again, it's a very poor choice of occupations for me. I think more than anything
else.
Please
don't change a thing.
Yeah.
Just keep doing it. Who else am I going to go to when I want to ask about a Pendleton?
Well, you can ask me, because again, I'm not being, other than the phone calls I've received while we're talking, which are probably from total strangers. You know, because I'm not dealing with these things every second of the day, because I can't get my hands on them. I am trending right now, though, because of this movie. So I'll fade into obscurity quickly. But because of this movie, the blankets have gotten a lot of attention, which is really the main thing. You know, it is. I'm not trying to promote myself. I'm trying to promote how beautiful I think these blankets are. You know, and I've always thought that. And even before I was selling them, now, of course, you know, there's money to be made on occasion. So, you know, I can't say that I'm disinclined to sell them because of the money. What I love most is placing beautiful blankets in the hands of people who appreciate them. And I am much less motivated by profit than I am in just promoting the blankets. I think they're an important part of American history. I think they're beautiful. I think they're still an essential part of American Indian life. And I just think, I don't know, I've collected a lot of things over the years. If you came to my house, you'd be shocked and you'd want to leave, but you'd be amazed at what I collect. I mean, it's just...
I would be dumbfounded. I love this kind of thing. And I'm looking at, for those of you who are just listening, head over to YouTube to watch the video because we are on video and you can see these beautiful blankets behind Barry right now. I mean, how many blankets do you typically have at one time there?
Well, I usually have between 300 and 400, but wow. It's the other things that I have.
Yeah.
For example, I also deal in rocks and minerals. So last week, I made a small purchase of 25 tons of rocks. So that's 50,000 pounds. I collect about, I don't know, 20 different things. And quite frankly, to be honest with you, my house scares me. I walk in, I go, oh my God, a sociopath lives here. Who can live here? You know, just the dusting aspect alone is out of control.
But look how much fun you're having.
You know, I'm having
some people
fun,
that
but
don't
really,
have this kind of fun.
I think I have very deep-seated problems. You know, I look around here and I go, this is a psychiatrist's dream come true. You know, in the room where I'm speaking right now, the entire ceiling, not the walls, are covered with antique kites.
Awesome. Way awesome.
You know, it's awesome if you're visiting. If you live here, if you had a room that your husband had adorned with antique kites on the ceiling, you might not be as pleased. That's all I can say.
Now, are there rocks around your bedroom as well? Blankets?
There's rocks everywhere. There's rocks in my front yard. There's rocks in my backyard. There's rocks in the bathroom. There's rocks everywhere.
Do you have any blankets that you'll never sell that will always be a permanent part of your collection?
That's a very good question. I have a wall that maybe you can see behind me that has 16 blankets that are hanging up. Can you see those?
Yes.
Or any Beautiful. Of them? Mm-hmm. Okay, yep. So that's a rack system that a friend of mine built many years ago. And the blankets that are on that wall, some of them are very important, very valuable blankets. And there's others that are really not of that caliber at all, that are very inexpensive, that'd be worth, you know, $500, $600, $700.
Right.
And for some reason, I think it's strictly because I'm lazy, I never take a blanket off that wall. So there's 16 blankets there. And I guess, in answer to your question, I've never sold any of those blankets, so I guess they're not for sale. And I had one there that a guy who was obviously completely insane offered me $20,000 for. It wasn't worth anything like that. And I said no. I have no idea why. And so the blanket is still there, which is ridiculous.
Oh.
Wow. It wasn't worth a fraction of that. I guess I was just in a surly mood that day. I didn't particularly like this guy.
Okay.
So
no, don't touch my blankets.
Yeah, so it was just no, because I didn't like him, you know. It wasn't anything to do with the value. I should have just grabbed the money, but no. So there was a very important politician. I can't mention his name because he's no longer with us, but I threw him out of my house.
Whoa.
I didn't like the way he was talking to his wife, so I told him he had to leave.
I thought you were going to say, I didn't like the way he was talking to my blankets.
No, well, it was over the blankets that the conversation was taking place.
Yeah.
But he was being so disrespectful to his wife that I just told him he needed to, you know, sort of take a little hike.
Good for you. Thank you for standing up for women.
Well, you know, I think that's important. I have a very, very spectacular girlfriend that I've told you about in a previous conversation. I worship her, and I have two daughters that I worship, and women should run the world. I really believe that.
Amazing. Hello to Barry's daughters and girlfriend.
I mean, look what's going on in the world. This is all created by men. So
how women put up with you.
how women put up with men is beyond me.
So if someone would like to take a peek at your blankets and talk business, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, that's easy. I'm on Instagram. I have my website. If you just look up Barry Friedman Blankets, you will find me.
Okay.
Perfect. And then if you're in Phoenix, Arizona, if you want to come by, you're more than welcome to come by. There's no obligation to buy ever. You'll have to listen to my stories, which is punishing, but there's really no obligation to buy. Like I said, I actually am upset when I sell a blanket. So.
Like, are you sure you want to buy that from me?
Yeah, I mean, really, sometimes I'll go, yeah, I don't think you really want that. Why don't you look at this one over here? You know, so. I'm a very reluctant seller. So, but people are always welcome here because I like giving tutorials and showing them the difference between one blanket from another. You know, this is really something that I'm deeply involved in for no apparent reason other than, you know, I have mental issues. But
when I think that people that come in there should hopefully they've listened to this podcast and they can hear how much you love and care about these blankets and what they mean to not just yourself, but also to our history and all of that. So hopefully people that come into your place of business will also respect what they're looking at.
I'm sorry. I have a terrible habit of interrupting people. But
me too.
these are so important historically.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at someone like Chief Joseph, who I consider one of the greatest people who ever lived in any culture, when you see him wrapped in a blanket, you know, and know that this is something that was an important thing to him, or you see Geronimo wearing a blanket that he personally picked out, undoubtedly. You know, these are major historical figures that valued these things. It's not just me, some knucklehead in Phoenix, Arizona. You know, these have a real history and a resonance and have been popular for 125 years plus for very good reason because they're gorgeous. And right. They're also, you know, everyone has to own a blanket. You've got to keep warm at some point. I don't care where you live. It's a staple item. And these are much more beautiful than what you're going to buy at your local department store. There's really an amazing history to these things that I think surprises most people, including American Indian people. And yeah, so I really enjoy always talking to American Indian people. As you and I have discussed, you know, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, so we had the Cleveland Indians baseball team, you know, but I never dreamed that I would be lecturing to American Indian people or meeting American Indian people. You know, right. I didn't know a single American Indian person. And so that's been a wonderful thing in my life. I've met some just incredible people, and to hear the stories of their cultures and their families and just, you know, understanding their world a little better has been such a blessing to me.
I definitely feel the passion about both the blankets that you're collecting and trading and selling, but also just the expertise. Just you've learned so much over the years. And what's really cool is you've taken those and put that passion into some books. These are some of the most beautiful books I've ever seen. Two books, colorful pages of the Pendleton blankets.
And bad jokes. Yeah.
It's perfect. It's something for everybody.
Yeah. And my second book, I didn't have an editor and I self-published. So I literally went crazy. To be honest, it's a blanket book, but it's really a joke book with pictures of blankets. And so if you don't like my sense of humor, you're in deep trouble at page one.
That's hilarious.
But the pictures are gorgeous. So just don't read the text. If you don't like my humor, just don't read the text, but look at the pictures because they're fabulous.
Tell us the name of your two books and where people can find them.
Well, my first book's out of print. So if you're going to find that.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
Goodness.
So I'm revising that book. So the original book was 304 pages. The new version, if I ever get it done, is going to be over 500 pages because I'm adding pictures of at least 200 blankets.
It's exciting.
And it's been out of print for quite some time. So this is going to be like an enormous book. It's going to be Barry's Blanket Bible. And it's going to weigh probably 7 or 8 pounds. This thing's going to be ridiculous. But it'll be the last word I ever write because it's going to be as comprehensive as I can make it. So that book's out of print. The only way you can get that book is to look on eBay or Amazon and hope that someone is selling it cheap because they've been as high as $2,000.
Yeah. I was originally going to go get one. And I was like, oh, okay. It's $500 on eBay. So
yeah,
saying it's not worth it, but
yeah, no, it's not worth it. Trust me.
Stop.
There's used copies sometimes that show up. It was originally printed at $50 and that was in 1991, I think, or I'm not sure. No, 2002. I don't really know when I wrote anything, to tell you the truth. But anyway, when it was originally printed, it was $50. Once in a while, something shows up, usually used, that will be $40 or $50 or $75. So that'd be the bargain price because they are $400 or $500 in new condition. So that book I can't provide, but my second book, and I want to discuss the title of my second book because I had 12 years to think about a second title. So the original book is called Chasing Rainbows, Collecting American Indian Trade and Camp Blankets. The second book after 12 years.
Drum roll, please.
Yeah, this is what the comedy writer, allegedly the creative writer, came up with after 12 years, was still chasing rainbows. I came up with the word still after 12 years of thinking about
this.
You
know, it's subtle. It's, you gets to the right to the point. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a creative breakthrough. The way I wanted it done was to look like it was a rubber stamp, you know, with still, so it looked like a court document, but it didn't turn out that way. So now it just looks stupid. And anyway, but it's a beautiful book. I had a great photographer. So that book is available. So if people want to go to my website, you can buy it on my website or you can contact me and I'll tell you how to get it. I sell lots and lots of books. And I'm much better about selling books than I am blankets. I gladly sell a book where I, you know, sometimes cry when I sell a blanket. So.
Oh, right, yeah. Right. Easier to get those off the shelf.
Yeah, I can get the books reprinted. I can't get the blankets remade. So true.
Well said. All right. I promised you listeners that I'd have a special request for those of you who own Pendleton blankets. Would you do me a favor? Feel free to send me a photo of yourself with your favorite Pendleton blanket or blankets, and I'll be sure to feature you on my Native Chalk Talk Facebook page. And I'll also put your name in for a drawing to win a Native Chalk Talk t-shirt. So let's see all those beautiful blankets, y'all.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Yeah. Well, you can do it too, Mary, if you'd like.
Let me throw in something from my end. If any of your listeners want a blanket identified and or appraised for free with no obligation whatsoever, you know, just get a hold of me. My email and my contact information is easily available. Just send me a picture. I'll tell you what you have.
That's amazing. Thank you for that, Barry. I didn't know Barry was going to offer that to us. So yeah, feel free to let us know. And in fact, again, you can find Barry on his website, barryfriedmanblankets.com, and on social media, if you look for Barry Friedman Indian Blankets, I'll put that information on my Facebook page, as well as if you're watching YouTube, you'll be able to see those sites there. So thank you, Barry, for that. And before we go, are there any words of wisdom you'd like to share with our listeners?
You know, my children can tell you I have no words of wisdom, really. None.
No words.
Any words of wisdom that I have, I don't recall because I'm old now and my memory is shot. I don't remember what I told you 5 minutes ago, but I'm sure it was brilliant. You know, I'm just I would just say, if you've got one of these blankets, cherish it. Make sure that, now I want to tell people how to preserve them. Do not put it in plastic. The best thing for an old blanket, number one, is you want to keep it away from a moth. You don't want that. So moths like really dark places, and they like blankets that haven't been unfolded for a long time, that have just been left, you know, folded and, you know, not touched. So you want to shake out a blanket once in a while. You want to keep it where there's some light, but not a lot, because sunlight will fade it. So you don't want to put it on a chair next to your window. But if you're going to keep the blanket, the best way to do it is to roll the blanket rather than fold it, like they do in an Oriental rug shop, and keep it within a 100% cotton blanket, or excuse me, a cotton sheet, rather than putting it in plastic. Eventually, plastic is going to hurt your blanket. It might be 50 years, but it's not what a museum would recommend. So what you want is 100% clean cotton sheet. But the best thing is just sort of to keep the blanket where it's visible, shake it once in a while, and it'll probably be fine.
There you go, folks. The expert himself, who has 300 or 400 blankets right now in his home, that's such good advice. And I absolutely love that you care about these blankets and about our listeners' blankets as well. So thank you for that. The Pendleton blanket kept our American Indian population both warm and stylish. But these blankets were also buried with those who had gone to meet their creator, and they were passed along to family members. Perhaps the history of our people is woven into the blankets, much like the yarn is woven together. Whether you own a new or old Pendleton, I hope you'll admire it as more than just a blanket, but as a piece of the stories of our past, present, and future. Yakuki Berry, for joining me today and for sharing about these beautiful blankets. Thank you.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to Native Chalk Talk. Be sure to join our community on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and check us out at nativechalktalk.com. Stay tuned for the next episode. You're going to love it. Yakuki. Thank you, my friends.